This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
It is Long Shots, golf betting podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, Kelly Bidlin coming to you after a heartbreak this past week. Kelly's still here with us. He's shaking his head. Everything is okay over there in Bidlin land, but boy.
Hey, man, I'm Gucci, man. I don't know. You're leading in like I had a pre-tournament bet on Shane Lowry. I didn't have a pre-tournament. I snagged a little live on Saturday, but the top 10 and top 20s all got home. I'm good, man.
Yeah, it was one of those where you're looking at, you know, how hard golf really is. You know, you listen to Shane Lowry afterwards. He hit the same club on the same hole the three rounds before that. Everything was perfectly fine. And unfortunately, in every round of golf, a golfer's going to have a bad swing. His just happened to come at the absolute worst time. And it ended up costing him the golf tournament. And with that, you know, I look back and you can't really, it's hard to fault, you know, Shane Lowry. I mean, it was just an unfortunate time to have the bad swing. It goes back to the thing that we always say here, golf's really hard. It's impossible sometimes. And with that, you know, a guy gets in his own head, back-to-back bogeys for the first time in his PGA Tour career to end up finishing
what
below Nico Echeverria, who gets it done. And Wes, I look at this and I don't know how many times we've bet Nico and not gotten home with him or whatever, but you know, here's the deal. He looked at the scoreboard. He knew where he stood. He decided to go out and birdie anyway, and having no idea how important the birdie was going to be. And when it's all said and done, Nico Echeverria, the seven-figure score, and more importantly, the Open Championship invite.
Yeah, and, you know, Shane Lowry, you got to feel for him anyway, because he's been snake bit, especially here at PGA National. Bear Trap, of course, got him on the 16th. If you remember a few years ago when Sepp Straka won this event, when all of a sudden Shane Lowry gets 18 and it starts pouring down rain, like right there where he like needs a birdie to get in a playoff, and it just, the weather came at the very wrong time for him and the wind's howling. So he has finished, by the way, 11th or better in five straight years at PGA National without a victory. So you look at the form, like guys don't usually keep that form line in a single event, you know, year after year after year, and he did. But credit to Echeverria, who gets that Open Championship invite in the Masters as well. Third career PGA Tour victory, by the way, the first here stateside, because the two, one was in Japan and one, I believe, I forget if it was Mexico or Puerto Rico or one of those alternate events he won. So he has now won three times on the PGA Tour, starting to get some win equity where it's like he's winning like almost every single year at one event. It's just you got to figure out which event it's going to be. But Nico gets home. He was 70-1 pre-tournament. He was actually 35-1, by the way, on the 16th hole to win the Cognizant, because Shane Lowry at that point had a 3-shot lead. And then all of a sudden that disappears, and things happen in golf, and it unfortunately happened to Shane Lowry.
Yeah, Kelly, as you're watching that, you know, honestly, I felt more bad for him, and credit where credit is due. He stood on the microphone. He did the interview like a man, but that's where I really started to feel for him. He was just saying, yeah, you know, I got a tee time next Thursday. It's not necessarily about me. It's the first time my four-year-old had been there. My four-year-old's never seen me win. I thought I was going to win, and then like not to get her to be able to come down and give me the hug after winning the tournament. That's when I'm like, oh, dude, yeah, that's dude. So brutal. Like, it's like, I mean, he took it pretty well. He's like, yeah, you know what? I got a tee time next Thursday. I've got to shake it off or whatever, but I really feel bad for my kid. And I'm just like, oh,
dude, I was thinking about it the whole time when he was blowing up, because I don't remember who the on-course reporter was, but they did a great job of tracking down Lowry's family. And it was like, it was a walk in the park, right? He had a 3-shot lead at the turn or whatever it was. Like, this was written in stone already. So they started doing the story about, yeah, the daughter's first time ever out there seeing her dad play live, and they're making the jokes in the booth like, oh, you know, I guess she's going to have to come to every golf tournament now. And yeah, just, that part was awful. I'm not like, Lowry deserves all the credit in the world for yes, getting done with the terrible round of golf like that and answering those questions. But I don't know. I expect that of athletes. And Shane's a pro. He's a pro. He knows how it works. I thought it was cool and classy he did that. But I expect professionals to act that way a bit. I want to get your guys' take because, you know, I'm a little biased with this tournament. I think that's one of the best closing stretches of golf. And the fact that something like that can happen is awesome. I don't know, though. You know, a lot of people would say, you know, it's not cool that in two holes some guy can lose a tournament like that. So in such a crushing manner. But this is what I think makes PGA National awesome and this tournament awesome is finishes like that.
Absolutely. And we're going to get that this week, by the way, at Bay Hill. You've got that par 3 17th, 221 yard tee shot, typically into a wind. And then the 18th, par 4, where you've got water on the right and out of bounds into play on the left. So I like that. You know, I like that challenge because you want some intrigue. We don't want runaways every single week unless we're betting on the winner and we've got a few shot lead. And it's like, yeah, let's just get on cruise control here. But, you know, that was just unfortunate for Shane Lowry. And he was very classy in defeat, as you would always expect him to be. Shout to Austin Smotherman, by the way, finished a three-way tie for second. And he and I believe Taylor Moore and I want to say Keith Mitchell played their way into their field, into Bay Hill, because they have that swing five, right? The Aon swing five, where you get in and you get those last spots in the signature event. So Keith Mitchell, Patrick Rogers, Andrew Putnam, they get into the field at Bay Hill this week.
I just wanted to confirm real quick. I was just wanted to confirm I wasn't misremembering this, but you know, they show the big bear statue and everything right at the bear trap. It says, this is a Jack Nicklaus redesign, and it says on the damn statue, it should be water lost right here. This is exactly how the tournament's designed. It is designed for fireworks like that down the stretch. And Wes, I'm looking forward to it again this week. I think it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, Kelly, just kind of answer your question. To me, it's I feel bad that you can like basically blow a four-stroke lead like that or whatever. But at the same time, I mean, that is kind of what it's all about, right? It's like standing on a tee box where, you know, if you hit it right, you're dead. You miss left, it's not ideal, but it's not the end of the world, right? And it's just, you know, you put the worst swing of the entire week right there at the end. But I mean, that's what happens, right? I mean, like, it is the reason we play four rounds of golf is because we want the person that can do it the most consistently for four rounds. And like, again, like we said, credit where credit's due. Nico Echeverria looked up that scoreboard. He knew where he sat and he probably thought he was dead. Everybody thought he was dead. And he went out and he made a birdie anyway, and then comes back and wins the tournament after Shane falls off. And so I'm with you. I think that we're finishing goal. I one of two things, right? I either like it where dudes can catch up on finishing holes. Like I hate when the holes are basically dormant. What I don't is when you look and like 17, 18 or 16, 17, 18 or something, like they all are just playing like right at par. Like, you know, and then so it's just like, I don't like that at all. Like, yeah, so that's kind of for me from a course standpoint.
We've said it before, even take away the water, right? I just like a closing par five because of that. You get a par five as your last, well, okay, then the entire tournament can swing, right? Like a two-shot deficit or whatever. Nothing is locked in when you get a par five in play.
Now, what you hate about a closing par five, though, is when it goes to a playoff and they play it over and over and over and over again. It's like, guys, can we maybe go back to like some hole on the front nine? Like go back to the ninth or the hole 10th six, or something and just not play this over and over again and get these like seven hole playoffs, which are ridiculous.
But with that, again, very meaningful tournament for some of those people, as Wes just mentioned. And of course, obviously for Nico, and it's still worth it. It's still worth saying he earned it. He went out, he did it. And good on him for that finish there in that one. But we continue on here with the Florida Swing. We talked about how unfortunate the timing was for that tournament last week and why the field was what it was, because we're going back to back biggies here and you talk to the guys on tour, absolutely love playing the Arnold Palmer. As Kelly pulls up the odds board here, this is just happens to be DraftKings. We'll try to point out any discrepancies that we see along the way. No shock that Scottie Scheffler is your favorite here in this tournament, followed by Rory McIlroy. And then a big, big gap, Kelly Bidlin, between those two and everybody else. And honestly, you start to run the models, you start to put things together, and you kind of understand why that is.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It was, as usual, I was trying to immediately go down the board, make some cases, and I got a lot of bets, man. I'll tell you, after a couple weeks of not liking a ton on the board, I'm feeling dangerous this week, boys. I'm feeling dangerous this week. And yeah, the favorites are who they are for a reason, though. And I went down the board and then I went right back up the board again when I was settling on outrights and who's actually going to win this tournament. Awesome event, though. I don't think any shocker to see where Scotty, where Rory is. Some Tommy Fleetwood respect in the market, which I think is fair and he's earned at this point. And yeah, I Fitzpatrick, I know Wes has been high on him. I've been high on him the past couple of weeks. I think he's probably pretty deserving right there, too. I wouldn't say any huge shockers that really jumped out to me on the odds board, but some bets I like.
Yeah, kind of same with me, Wes. I was looking down. I mean, you understand why the guys with the massive, massive numbers next to their name, why they are where they are. Nothing really was crazy to me other than the fact that, you know, this is where with Justin Thomas making his return here, this is where you're going to see just a gigantic name next to Justin Thomas, which we are not used to seeing. I mean, as high as 65-1 out there in the market right now on Justin Thomas, 66-1, I should say, on Justin Thomas as he makes his return from surgery and everything. And, you know, it's outside of that. I think all of the numbers pretty much were in line where these guys' games are at the moment. I mean, yeah, it's a fatter number next to Ludwig than we're used to seeing and maybe next to Victor. But I mean, whenever you look at their form and trying to put together four rounds, which they have not been able to do, you kind of get why those numbers are bigger too.
Yeah, you mentioned JT returning, also Sun JM returning from wrist surgery. Man, this is a tough event to return to, though, with that thick rough, but they come back to it because they love it, because it is the King's Tournament. It is the Arnold Palmer Invitational, and so many who's have won here. Tiger, Scotty, Rory, Bryson, Ernie Els, Vijay Singh, Phil Mickelson, Fred Couples, Payne Stewart, Paul Azinger, Tom Kai, like, it's a who's who is who's won here at Bay Hill. So that's why they come back for it. And plus, it's a big signature event. But yeah, I think everybody from that standpoint, you know, the numbers are relatively accurate. This is, you know, one of the best fields of the year. It's one of the best tournaments of the year, I think. And typically it usually plays hard. I know there's been a couple years where the weather, you know, cooperates maybe even more so than it usually does, and you get some lower scores like you had with Scotty a couple years ago. But a lot of times in recent years, you've been getting single digits under par. You'd be getting like 10, 11, 12 under, where they're not tearing up the course necessarily, because this is a long golf course. This is deceptively long at 74-66, par 72. So there's a lot of challenges here. So even though these guys are the best in the world, I don't know if we're going to quite get, you know, really high teens under par to win this thing.
Yeah, Kelly, you have opened the weather right here. I was listening to the Golf Channel before we got to recording here. There was boots on the ground over there that said there was a little bit of rain yesterday over there, which he actually thinks is going to make the course play tougher. Usually we talk about courses playing softer and maybe whatever, but he actually said that that's going to make this rough even worse. Like, it's just going to grow up. He said he actually saw the difference in the rough from yesterday to just this morning with that little bit of rain that hit. And so that was the concern there on that one, was just like, hey, listen, it's already gnarly rough. And if anything, it might be a little bit gnarlier since we got a little bit of a sprinkle yesterday.
Yeah, this is going to be, you know, we're going to talk about it, but definitely a tough track to play out of the rough. And yeah, if that's, what are we starting at 3 inches? We talk about this all the time. If it's just going to dump rain, this is only going to get longer and longer through the tournament. Yeah, I saw it a little bit. Been tracking this the past couple days. Looked like it was raining a bit out there today. Definitely more in the forecast for Thursday now than what I saw yesterday. What are we looking at? A 68% chance precipitation, I believe, on Thursday that we're looking at. Though it doesn't, as of now, I always say, like, this is, hey, we've got to do content. We got to make some bets. You can wait. You guys at home can wait as long as you want before the tournament to fire. Doesn't look like right now we're looking at Eddie's wave advantage or anything like that. Looks like some relatively calm winds, just normal kind of Florida rain that they'll be getting on Thursday, a little bit on Friday. Weekend right now looks pretty clear, but it's Florida. Things can change, will change.
So, Wes, people who have not been a VSiN Pro subscriber quite yet, you can go over there. You can get in for as little as $9.99 or $29.99, everything we do now to May the 1st. But Wes has a write-up over there, as he does each and every week, if you want the full breakdown top to bottom of this course. But Wes, run us through a little bit about what we're going to see at Bay Hill.
Yeah, par 72, 74, 66. Did get some renovations a couple years ago, especially around the green, where they took off the runoff areas because you used to chip from tight lies here. And now they have some 3-inch thick rough around the green. So that makes it a different type of chip. What really kind of stands out on this course is the par threes, which are the longest on tour. They average 220 yards. I'm going through the scorecard here. Number two is 231. 14 is 215. 17, which I mentioned earlier, is 221. So you got three of them over 220 yards here. So those are the toughies. We mentioned the rough, of course, overseeded rye, Tiff Eagle, Bermuda greens that are going to be fast. I think on even with the rain, they're still going to be fast. They're going to be 13, 14 on the stem on the weekends. Large greens, by the way, here, 7,500 square feet. So fourth largest on tour, but that doesn't mean they're necessarily easy to hit because you've got a lot of bunkers here, 84 in all. You got water in play on nine holes. And then, of course, you've got the rough. In the last like 6 years, it's rated in the top 10, even when Scotty went 15 under a couple of years ago, as the toughest courses on the PGA Tour. Fairways were a little bit widened a few years ago. Some of the trees were removed. So the driving is maybe a slight bit easier, but the approaches, I think, are a little bit more difficult. And then, you know, you've got really tough challenges, I think, on this course. And like Kelly said, the weather can change here in Florida on a dime. So initial forecasts like that I put in the write up may be a lot different than we see this week. But if you're looking for comparable courses, a lot of the classical courses that you see on the PGA Tour, a little bit of Quail Hollow, Olympia Field, some of the Florida courses like PGA National, like Concession. And then recent major championship courses have a little bit of correlation, especially at the rough, like Bethpage, like Wingfoot or Oak Hill. So, you know, if you put a lot of credence, I guess, into that in terms of how do guys perform on certain courses, do they do well at Bay Hill? Those are maybe some of the ones to look at. And then when Kelly mentioned weather, I think this is still going to be firm and fast, especially the fairways. So I think that this is still going to have some roll, and you're not maybe going to have the win that you had last year. But like we say, you never know with this weather.
Kelly, as you looked at the course, I mean, you know, again, I expect it to be a very, very difficult course, very difficult scoring conditions. They do that in honor of Arnold Palmer. He is a guy that like always talked about how much he thought that the stern test for these golfers is the way to go. Unlike last week where we said they didn't want the aesthetics of the course to be affected. And so they went back to overseeding and things like that. That will not be the case here at Bay Hill. And so this is Bermuda's dormant this time of year. And so by Saturday and Sunday, you might be watching this thing. The greens might look brown. Like they might be like, there might like look like things like that. Especially if the wind blows a little bit and it kind of burns them out a little bit and the sun's shining and all that. And like, trust me, that makes for very difficult conditions. I mean, that means they are hard as hell. That means they are fast as hell. They are not going to hold very well. They're harder to chip off of the fairway. It's just, there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes into all of that. And so again, it's a, they are not worried about what it looks like on TV there at Bay Hill, and they're going to make this course a sumbitch, that's for sure.
Yeah, look, it's good. It's one of those tests that we talk about, you know, multiple times a year. It's going to test every club in the bag, right? Like it is the. I do think we made a lot out of it a couple years ago, Wes. I can remember the three of us talking about it, right? Hey, these mowed down area runoff areas off the green, like every great chipping. We were all convinced Victor Hovland was going to solve all his problems, right? He was going to win at Bay Hill because he could chip out of the rough now. I don't know if that's really the case. I think still around the green is pretty tough here. It is going to matter in this tournament. And look, I think off the tee matters a whole lot here, and you can get it done different ways. Distance absolutely helps. But you want to keep it in the damn fairways for sure, as when you're hitting these approach shots in, like Matt talked about, if this rough's getting even longer because of rain this week, you want to be staying out of that. It's just heavy, heavy approach course, long iron play, right? We're going to have a lot of long iron shots here. 175 plus, 200 plus. Definitely want to be factoring that in if you're doing some of your modeling at home this week. And yeah, man, got to score on the par fives, right? You've got four par fives out there that have a good birdie rate. You have to go and score at par fives. I ran a couple different models. And when we get to that, I'll go through them, guys. But I kind of did one where kind of my normal Bay Hill model. And then I just kind of took a step back last night and it was like, man, I'm just going to overweight, like off the tee, par five scoring, bogey avoidance, and some putting stats, and then all the heavy approach stuff that I just mentioned. And it was kind of funny because I didn't really see anything else huge different from my normal model, but I really think those are where I really emphasize things, and some course history. If you got some course history here, haven't played here before, I think does matter. So there really wasn't too many discrepancies, but that was really where I kind of boiled down to the most important things for me this week. Off the tee, long approach play, score on the par fives, and then a little bit of the just save your ass stats, bogey avoidance, scrambling, go up there and make some putts.
And just a reminder, guys, even though this is an elevated event, there will be a cut. So just, you know, it could be, again, same as like we always say, it's a lot of the field can make it through. Most of the field can make it through. But anyway, top 50 in ties. And the reason I say most of the field could make it through is just if we don't expect scoring to be very good here,
yeah.
So long as nobody is really blowing up, you know, we could see a bunch of the people make it through here in this tournament, which since there is a cut, that means $4 million up top in this one. So if you want to keep that in mind for your one and done, which we'll discuss a little bit later. So Kelly, you mentioned some of the stats you found important. Wes, as you were throwing stuff into your models and whatnot, where did you, what did you land on?
Approach, as typical, is where I will start, because Bay Hill is actually one of the toughest courses to gain on approach, despite the fact that you have massively large greens here at about 7,500 square feet. And in terms of like going to a proximity bucket, I used approaches of over 200 yards because about a third of the shots come here. And we know I mentioned that the three of the four par threes are over 200 yards. So I wanted to see, you know, the proximity. I thought that that was useful this week. But the interesting thing about modeling this week, I think, is what you do off the tee. Because if you look at last year, was last year an outlier? Because if you look at the standings, the leaderboard from last year, Russell Henley, of course, had that chip in on 16 to take the tournament from Colin Morikawa. So it was Henley, Morikawa, Corey Connors, Michael Kim, Keegan Bradley, Sepp Straka, Shane Lowry, your top seven. Before the first bomber was like Benny On, who was eighth. So these were all like really good iron players that are pretty good straight hitters that are usually good on like good drives gained and stuff like that. I didn't want to go like, so this is where my quandary was, where it's like, I didn't want to go too heavy on distance. We've seen bombers win here. Bryson's won here. Rory's won here. But you've also seen guys that aren't necessarily bombers. They're just good overall ball strikers. Russell Henley, Francesco Molinari, Tyrrell Hatton, who have won here. So I didn't want to go too much distance, and I didn't want to go too much accuracy either, because I feel like if you go too much accuracy, you're taking out some really elite drivers of the golf ball. So I went with total driving. Which total driving, of course, is driving distance plus driving accuracy. I thought that that was a good way to kind of split the difference if you were non-committal one way or the other, whether you were more on the distance side or more on the accuracy side. Accuracy, I think, won out last year, and maybe distance wins out this year. We've certainly seen that in the past. And then use a little strokes gain off the tee because it's difficult to gain strokes here because you got thick rough, you got water on nine holes. Some of these times players won't hit driver. They'll club down and hit three wood or like a two iron or something like that. Distance helps, but I don't think it's the length off the tee that matters maybe as much, just because you got some roll in the fairways. Mentioned about how the par threes are pretty long and difficult. Kelly, you talked about it. Par five scoring, all of them are reachable. Like none of these par fives, like there's no 660 yard par five. There's nothing ridiculous here. And they've got just under a 40% birdie or better rate. So I think you want to look at that. Strokes gained around the green. Now, this is just the last 2 years. Each of the last 2 years, the guy that won the tournament, Henley, last year, Scotty in 2024, led the field for strokes gained around the green because these greens are a little bit elevated and contoured. You got the thick grass, so you're going to have some difficult par saves on this one. So that's why, you know, you look at strokes gained around the green. Scrambling, bogey avoidance, I think, is another one. I did a little bit of birdie or better here because this is such a difficult course. This is not a course that necessarily has a lot of birdie opportunities. I think Rory has said in the past, it's like, take advantage of the par fives and be pretty conservative and, you know, escape with pars on the rest, and you're going to give yourself a good chance to win this thing, because that's what Tiger, I think, did a lot. And he only, by the way, won this thing 8 times, by the way, if you're counting. Tiger Woods has 8 red cardigans, as jeez. I have adorned a red cardigan today in honor of the Arnold Palmer Invitational. So a little bit of birdie or better. Strokes gained putting Bermuda, I think you could do it. They're going to get a little faster over the weekend, so you're going to have some lag putts here. Like I mentioned, you have those long 200-yard shots. Well, you're not always going to stick those within 10 feet. So a lot of times you're going to be about 40 feet away. So you got to lag and make your two putt and take your par. And that's pretty much what I put in here this week. You could use maybe some course history. There's obviously some disparate numbers because now you have everybody playing this because it's a signature event. And then you had your regular visitors that would normally play this on their, you know, normal tour stop as they're making their schedule. So, you know, you'll have some that you could go, if you do like last 36 rounds, that have played 36 rounds here. And you have some that have played like 8 rounds here, 12 rounds. So there's always a little bit of disparity in that.
Does everybody get paid this week? Everybody gets paid, even if you miss the cut, right?
Wait, I believe.
No, Matt.
No, okay. Because that's why it's $4 million up top instead of 3.6, because okay, the extra money goes up top. Order. So like when everyone makes the cut, it's 3.6 up top. And then when there's a cut, it's $4 million up top.
Okay. I was going to bring that up because, you know, we got some guys returning from injury that you just never know if when there's free money out there, if Sungjae just tees one up like, all right, I'm good. See ya. But yeah, no, you're going to miss the cut. You ain't getting paid. Good.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much the same for me, guys. I did. It's funny, Wes, that you didn't want to do distance. So I ran two different versions of the model. I did one with distance and then one without, just to kind of see if there was anyone that I was overlooking because they might not really fit the distance deal. And then hopefully there were some names that obviously interjected where it's like, yeah, they were high in the distance model, and then they were also high in the model that didn't have any distance. And I'm like, okay, well, then maybe that's someone I need to be paying attention to for sure. But outside of that, I mean, I did throw in some opportunities gained. Opportunities, obviously, is if you have a chance from inside of 15 feet relative to the field. When I say gained on the field, because, again, birdies are going to be few and far between here, what I think. And so obviously, if you are at least within the realm of being able to realistically make a putt, if you're 15 feet as, you know, as a tour pro, it's going to drop, you know, it's going to drop 40% of the time or whatever and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like it's one of those for me, wanted to see those guys that were, they were at least putting it, giving themselves a look anyway, with that. But outside of that, I mean, it seems like we put in a decent amount of the same stuff this week. Not to say that that's going to mean that we landed on all the same players, but I do think that the way that we interpreted how do you have success at this course, given we do have so much history, given we have seen the type of player profiles that have worked out here, you know, I imagine us and a lot of people in the industry are probably landing on the same stuff.
Yeah, this is I think great breakdown, Wes, of really pointing out those players of where they finished kind of last year, because it's important. And I really, when I was talking about running kind of that second more basic model, I really just put in strokes gained off the tee and not any other driving stats, because I landed on a quote from Rory from a couple years ago, just talking about him talking about that stat. And we often talk about on this podcast that distance, it will influence that a little bit more. But you know, his point of bringing it up was kind of, you've got to gain off the tee one way or the other, right? Where either you need to have some distance or you need to be hitting fairways. And as you pointed out, Wes, there's ways to get it done without going long. You got to keep it in the fairways and hit some great approach shots. And that was, man, that leaderboard last year, that's a lot of names, guys that do a lot of the same thing, as you pointed out. Keep it in the fairway, and then they are great long iron players. So absolutely, I don't think those guys that might be shorter off the tee don't have a chance this week. I think they absolutely are.
It is that time, and we will get to the plays here that ended up making it into our accounts. Wes, I'm looking here as, you know, like we said, there are dudes that we know profile very well for a course like this, and your shortest play is certainly one of those guys. Lots of success here to go along with it.
Yeah, I had to go with Rory here at 10-1. As he's trying to complete the trifecta, by the way, this week. He's already had a winning week. Of course, he had that comeback with his Boston team in TGL on Sunday night. And then the very next day, he goes out and wins that Seminole Pro Member title, which, by the way, all these pros that played in that are members of that club, including Rory. So that's a hell of a tournament field, just that pro member title, which he, by the way, won with his father on Monday. So he's already won twice this week. So maybe another red cardigan is in order. I talked about it with him a couple weeks ago when we recapped, or last week when we recapped the Genesis. The putter was just cold out there, and he couldn't put any pressure on Jacob Bridgman, and credit to Jacob Bridgman, who played terrific. So he settled T2. He led the field strokes gained T to green. Like, Rory hit the ball great. And what I like is that he was kind of experimenting a little bit. You know, he plays mostly a draw, but he'll play some fades. But he was hitting those low stingers off the tee sometimes. Like, he was really kind of diversifying his arsenal. And I think working on different things, and you could see it. And he drove the ball, I thought, beautifully. And really, been the strength of his game so far this year has been approach. Number one on the PGA Tour, by the way. I know a very short sample size, has only had 2 months of action, but he's hitting his irons the best he's done in about 3 years. So if he can keep that up, I never not trust Rory McIlroy off the tee, is basically what I'm saying, whether it's from a distance or accuracy standpoint. I think he's still maybe the best driver of the golf ball in the world. Scotty certainly is right there neck and neck with him, but I never really worry about the off the tee game. It's, can the irons be on point? Or can the putter be firing? So Rory McIlroy at 10-1. Also a couple other guys, I guess you want to call them mid-ranges, even though they're like the fifth, sixth choice on the board. And they're all kind of the same price, anywhere 22 to like 28-1 in that range. This was the last guy I actually added. I went with Colin Morikawa here, who seemingly had control of this event last year before Henley chipped in eagle for 16. I think he was kind of shell-shocked. Morikawa is like, oh my God, I just had it, my heart ripped out here. And, you know, he was a little bit chippy because that continued the losing streak that he had. Not that I would know how that feels so far to start this year, but yeah, continued it. But now he broke that winless drought a few weeks ago at Pebble Beach. And then he announced that he and his wife were expecting after the victory. It's like, I wish you would have announced that before, man, because, you know, I like to play those type of angles when filling out these cards. Putter really is what cost him here last year. And he's 131st in putting, by the way, this season. But you look at the ball striking, too much to ignore. Followed up at Pebble Beach, he was T7 at the Genesis, where he was second in the field in accuracy, a category where he led the field, by the way, last year in his runner-up finish. I think he was like 41 of 56 in terms of fairways hit. So hitting fairways still gonna matter to stay out of this rough. So Colin Morikawa, and then right at that same price, Matt Fitzpatrick, four top 10s, seven top 25s, and 11 career starts here. Always comfortable. You know, I like to nickname him Matthew Flush Patrick, because he is number one, by the way, this season in ball striking, and which is greens of regulation and driving accuracy. And he's also fourth on approach, fifth for total driving. It's been the putter that's held him back. He is 141st, by the way, in strokes gained putting on the PGA Tour. And I went and kind of looked, like, where is he ranked on the PGA Tour? He's been inside the top 30, I think, in like five of his last six seasons. He's usually a little bit more closer to the top than he is to that line inside the top 30. I think just going back to the Bermuda in Florida is going to improve those numbers at least a little bit. Fitzpatrick's always been an elite putter. And I think that, you know, you're just waiting for it to fire. It didn't fire out in California because he's not a guy that usually played a lot of those California events, maybe Pebble Beach, but didn't really play a lot of those events until they became signature events. So he's not used to, I think, putting on that stuff. And I think it showed a little bit. He didn't seem comfortable necessarily on the greens. I think he'll be a lot more comfortable here at Bay Hill this week.
Kelly Bidlin, I see you are going to join Wes here on Rory McIlroy. I'll go ahead and say I also share one of your bets, which is I didn't bet Rory outright. I did bet him top five. I think we're going to get a good showing out of Rory here at this one. I don't know if he wins. Honestly, I think Scotty wins. We have three bad rounds from Scotty, and then like the other nine have been the best in the tournament, like comparatively to everybody else, like all three of the other tournaments. And so I don't think there's a trend here of him playing bad on Thursdays or any kind of anything like that. So I am going to play the upside of Rory here in the top five. And maybe if the number drifts at least a little bit, once we get going in tournament and there's something a little bit more juicy for me there. But you did join Wes on the 10-1.
Yeah, I did. And just quickly on Scheffler, I agree with you. And you know, I think that's the reason still why his odds are what they are. It's there's still a lot of faith in this guy. And caught this from Justin Ray. So Scotty Scheffler at Bay Hill last 4 years, 31 under par, best. Par five scoring, 39 under, best. Birdie or better average, 4.44, best. And strokes gained ball striking per round, 1.98, best. So yeah, Scotty Scheffler, still good at golf at this golf course.
If anyone's wondering, hashtag still good at golf. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
You know, like I said, at Data Golf, you can like put in your own model and it'll like, and it converts it into odds or whatever. It's like my true odds on Scotty come in at plus 410. I mean, it's 350 out there in the market. It's not that far off of where it is, you know, on that. But like I said, maybe there's any sort of drip. Maybe the models will be a little bit quicker after these last few rounds or something to, you know, the last few tournaments to give us a little bit. You know, better price, I don't know. I'm not counting on it, but just I guess spoiling my picks. I did not end up on Scotty, even though he is number one by a mile in all the models, and also I actually kind of think he wins the term.
Yeah, it's I hear you. I think that's an interesting point too on kind of the algos and what do we see happen with these slow starts. I doubt we're going to see anything there either, but maybe you never know. You never know. So yeah, for pre-tournament for me, I'm single bullet Rory outright 10-1. I actually thought getting into double digits 10-1, I thought was a pretty good number on Rory. I think I would have those two at the top. I have them a little bit closer together than the odds indicate, but it's not much. Like you just said, Matt, like 4-1. Yeah, probably something like that, more appropriate on Scheffler. I probably have Rory a little shorter. But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised to be able to get 10-1 on him. And Wes, you laid it out, man. I think this is more, you're always going to trust Rory off the tee, but just the massive approach numbers on these last two events. I mean, he is dialed in with his irons right now. And I got a lot of trust with him here at this golf course, right? Never finished worse than T27 here and has a win. Like, this guy is consistent as hell here. So yeah, outright in top five for me on Rory. And then I'm a bunch of placements and tournament matchups. Matt, you want to get through the rest of the outright bets here? Did you have anything else outright?
No, go ahead. I mean, I think your tens and twenties kind of like talk about your profile.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I like Wes, I've bet him a couple times and I've been very high on Matt Fitzpatrick. But played him in top 10 market and top 20 market this week, decided to go there instead of going outright with him. Wes broke it all down. I think for what we're looking at for Fitzpatrick, it's better ball striking than I could normally hope for. It's just the putter that's failing us. And I choose to believe that Matt Fitzpatrick's a better putter than what he's done the past few weeks. I mean, maybe he's just running cold and maybe Wes and I are walking right into it again with a cold putter and he's not going to be able to get it done. But man, he's one of the guys that I tend to trust a little bit more with that club. So he was still kind of top five at every model I ran. The tee to green numbers is just awesome. He's got six top 20 finishes here and 11 starts. Great start to the season, as Wes pointed out. Very comfortable with him, the top 10 and top 20 bets. Other top 10 that I played, Jake Knapp. I'm not going away from this kid, man. It's been basically an auto bet every week for me. I think this course is another one that lines up pretty well for his game. You know, we was starting to bet him last year, feel like I caught him in a rhythm when he had lost a little bit of accuracy with the driver, and he started to find some success at the shorter courses, which was interesting to me, and really, really proved how good his approach game and putting can be. And that part is carried over to this year, and the driver is completely locked in right now. He's top 25 in this field, off the tee, on approach, around the green, and putting. He's first in par five scoring. He's fifth in distance. This season, the finishes are ridiculous. If you haven't been watching, 6th, T8, 8th, T5, a T11. He's only got one start here, so you don't have that history that you'd like to see. But I'm going to believe in Jake Knapp in the form right now. I played a top 10 on him and a top 20 as well. And then the other top 20s that I played, Hideki Matsuyama, I'm going back to Hideki. Look, he's going to have to be good off the tee. I think looking at it, the fact that he's gained with the putter in three straight, we always worry about decking the putter. Maybe he's found something here this year. It's not big, but anything in the green for Hideki, I'll take with the putter. We've talked about around the green play and how much that's going to matter. He's one of the best long iron and around the green players that's out there. Do like Hideki this week. I just couldn't get there to an outright play or anything longer on him. T22 and T12 last 2 years here. And then T28, T8, a second, T11, and T13 so far this season. So Matsuyama looking like he's in good form. And then I cannot believe I keep betting this guy. But right back to Ricky Fowler. I'm a believer in Ricky Fowler and what he is doing ball striking this season. The only concern for me, and this is not a great course to have this concern, is a guy who's typically a pretty good around the green player has struggled around the green to start the season, but everything else is looking great with Ricky Fowler. I've never bet him this many times in his entire career, but I'm all in on Fowler this year. He's T28, T19, a T18, a T18 this season. Locked back in that top 20. I'm absolutely ready to go on Ricky Fowler again. And then I'm going back to a guy I played last week, Nikolai Højgaard. Top 20 market. I think this is another course that sets up pretty well for his game. This just ride the heater, especially on Sunday, him climbing up the leaderboard. Great ball striker, big gains on approach the last two events. He's gained with the putter off the tee and approach in four straight starts this season. Great finishes, T6, T3, T22, and a T4. So back to Nikolai Højgaard in the top 20 market, and then four tournament matchups real quick for you guys. Knapp over Oberg, Nikolai Højgaard over Chris Goddrup, Akshay Bhatia over Sepp Straka, and Ryo Satsune over Matt McCarty.
Oh, all right. Look at you.
All right. Been looking at a way to play Ryo recently. I actually really like that matchup.
Yeah, just three outrights for me this week and only one on the shorter side. So we'll wait and I'll give you the longer shot plays here in a little bit. I landed on Colin as well as my outright. That being said, I'm going to let you know that I don't love it.
Because you hate Colin Morikawa.
I don't either. He was like my last guy, and it was like, who do I play here in that range?
I mean, just full disclosure, I am loaded up again on him in the top 10 market, like just completely loaded. He can't putt. And so the thing is, it's just like, I don't know what his win equity is when you're leaving three strokes out there, four strokes out there over the course of four rounds that like everyone else is making. And it's just when you're in a field with Scotty and Rory and Fleetwood and all, you know, whatever. And all, I just don't know if that's enough for him to win, but everything else is so great right now that I'm just going to, you know, it's 225 still in top 10, right? I mean, it's plus 225. I mean, like it's, you're getting a good payoff on him in the top 10. And, you know, so I would just, this is about making money, right? I mean, like, I know it's sexy to hit outrights and like whatever. And like, apparently some people on the Twitter machine only care about when you hit outrights, but like, I'm here to make money. And like, so I'm just going to load up on Colin top 10 because I think he's going to probably finish in the top 10, but I don't know if he can win or not. I have less than I normally would on him at 27-1. Outside of that, just from what I would consider kind of shorter shot stuff for me is, and you, Kelly's got it pulled up right there. Look at the red. I mean, it's just like he can't putt. You know, he's a horrific putter.
But look at the approach numbers the last few weeks. Jeez.
It's like I said, I think he's got enough to top 10 again. He's a very accurate driver. We know we want people to be playing out of the fairway as much as possible here with all of that. And
It's how am just, I the only I guy not know, on Colin Morikawa?
Is with the putter right now. So
what does this podcast turn into? Kelly's the only guy not on Colin Morikawa. What the hell is going on around here?
Yeah, I know. Some strange stuff. I have Tommy Fleetwood in the top 10, and then I have three top 20s on one on Siwoo, one on Akshay, and then one on Knapp. I don't think Knapp has win equity in this tournament because he does spray it a little bit too much. And that, to me, I think here is going to really affect him. So I can't get there from an actual outright win. I see a double bogey hole in his future that probably just wipes him out of actual win contention. But I think a top 20 is in there. Akshay's long irons are fire. Yeah. Akshay is playing about as well as he's played in a long, long time. And I want to ride the heater before it goes away, because it will. It always does. We get a month and a half of good Akshay, and then like it goes away. So I'm going to ride the heater until it does. And from the woo, listen, I'm glad he took the week off. Get back in there, calm down, settle, and go get me a top 20, Siwoo. So all those sitting there at plus money. With that, Wes, you did have one long shot here in this tournament.
Well, two a little bit. By the way, I'm joining you guys on a couple of those placements. Fitzpatrick, Morikawa, by the way, if you have FanDuel, wherever you are, even money to finish top 20. I think that looks like a pretty much a free square in your pick five here if you're a horse better. But yeah, a couple I did play, and one was just on a number. One was a strong model play, and one was just a hunch. The hunch was Victor Hovland, who has drifted up into the mid 40s. The numbers don't indicate it. The numbers are like, well, he's kind of like nowhere right now. His putting's not good. His off the tee isn't that good. His approach is pretty solid. But going back to Florida, where he's always played well, remember, he probably should have won here in 2022, and then Scotty got him at the end. And then he was the 54-hole leader here in 2023. Bad Sunday round and end up tied for 10th. He's like the 14th price on the board this week if you count players up and down. So Victor Hovland is one for me. And then Nikolai Højgaard placement and also outright at 60-1. Had him on the card last week. Didn't really contend at the end, but Kelly and I were texting on Sunday. It's like, what's going on with this guy? He made like 7 birdies in his first 11 holes before he settled for T6. He's got 3 top 6 finishes this season. 3rd in Phoenix, 4th in Dubai, and then 6th last week in Palm Beach at the Cognizant. Top 50 right now in the OWGR. He's got to be inside that number if he wants to get in his Masters like Rasmus is already. Rasmus, by the way, the favorite for the Puerto Rico Open. I'll have a column up on that tomorrow. Distance and ball striking should just fit this place, even though he has missed the cut here in both appearances. I think Nikolai is kind of a different player now. You know, a little bit more experience, has played a little bit more in the States now, kind of knows what to expect. So,
and at least he's seen the course a couple times.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he went well again.
Yeah, maybe that's a bad read by me, but I take that away from when we learned on course experience. At least he's been here. I looked at some other guys.
He popped in like every single statistical category almost that I looked at.
Yeah.
Especially with the ball striking off the tee. If you want to look at distance, if you want to look at approach, if you want to look at proximity with long irons, like the guy was like right there. So I'm going to give him a shot. It was kind of down to him, and squeeze this in before we wrap up here. Like a couple guys that we look at that like almost made the card. Like for me, Knapp, by the way, was one, and I'm going to play the placements and agree with you guys. I almost played him on an outright. Minwoo Lee was kind of the tie between him and Nikolai Højgaard. Like, which of the two do I play? And I went with Nikolai. Minwoo doesn't really have a good history here, even though his game should be good. And then I almost got there with Ludwig Gobert. I'm interested to see what you think of him this week. He is actually being very widely tipped.
I think everybody is in love with the thought of Ludwig as opposed to like what you actually get on the course with Ludwig. Like, I mean, you see like this, this huge dude that bombs it and does whatever and all that stuff, but like he doesn't do it for 4 rounds. And like, that just to me is the thing where we're romanticized by about the potential where you're like, dude, if he just played every round, like he just played those 27 holes that I just watched him play, then like he's going to win, you know, every 5th tournament that he tees it up. But he just doesn't. It's like,
I wonder if he's hurt.
Concentration or something. Like he gets loose every tournament, and it just, and it like just slips away. I don't know what it is.
I wonder if he's hurt, because sometimes we get those guys, we keep playing, and then you find out like 2 months later, he's had a bad wrist or a bad knee or back or something's wrong with him.
Well, you know gents, what Cam Young was to Wes Reynolds, Ludwig Oberg is to Dave Ross. So you know what? Whenever he gets across that finish line, Dave's going to have he's going to have some tickets. So you'll be happy to.
He'll ask me about the big Swede tomorrow morning on Beeson by the books.
Yes, he will.
So I have two long shot outrights. It's funny. Well, one guy's already been mentioned here, Kelly. I landed on Ricky, man. Like it's 63. I love him right now. Out there, I don't necessarily know if he can win it, but again, this is another one of those guys where it's like, it's 63-1. Make five bets in your cash out book. And like, if he can get himself in the mix on Sunday, then cash a couple of them out, let the rest of them ride, you know, like, and just see if you can cash a big ticket here. So that's one of those things for me there on that one. And then we're going to go with Adam Scott there at 64-1. Off the tee approach numbers fantastic, tee to green numbers fantastic, around the green and putting just got to get better, but he did it at the Genesis, so maybe he can do it there as well. Guys, all of our picks over at vsin.com/picks page. Wes's article up over there as well. Remember, 4 million up top for this one. Play your studs out there in one and done. For Wes, for Kelly, I'm Matt. Good luck on all.
This is Long Shots, VEASAN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
No, he didn't. God, he played intro at the end.
I played the intro. Oh, no.
Yes, oh, no. He played the intro at the end.
Here it comes. Hey.
Hey, everybody. There we go now. Okay, what'd you say now?
I'm wondering why that worked so well, because it was already loaded. Yeah, good luck with all your bets.
Hey, sorry, Kelly, there we go.